Presenting radio's foremost laboratory of writing and production techniques, the Columbia Workshop. Every week over most of these CBS stations from coast to coast, the Columbia Workshop presents programs which accentuate the unusual and the experimental. Today's script is by a young San Francisco radio writer, Richard S. Burdick. Today's workshop director is Carl Beyer, and the original musical score is by Everett Helm. This is the story of a boy's plaything and a boy's primitive egotism, and how the two together affected the life of a schoolteacher in a small town. The Tin Whistle by Richard S. Burdick.
This morning, quite by accident, I came across an old newspaper item concerning Miss Margaret Rice, who was a teacher at the grammar school I attended. It's been 26 years since I last saw Miss Margaret Rice. She must have been about 30 at the time, and I was 9. My first impulse was to destroy the old newspaper clipping and dismiss it from my mind. But then I began to realize that I've been trying not to think about Miss Margaret Rice all my life, that I shall never escape the torment of her memory. It was on my 9th birthday that my father gave me the whistle. It was a little tin thing, and when you blew on it, it made a high, shrill blast, not unlike a police whistle. I gave it a tentative toot, then put it aside to play with a present from my mother, a pair of skates.
Martin, put your skates in the box now. It's time you were in bed.
Please, Mom, can I stay up and play some more? It's my birthday, and these skates you gave me are my favorite present.
No, Martin.
Please, Mama. I don't want to go to bed.
It's a half hour past your bedtime already.
Then will you come up when I'm in bed and kiss me goodnight?
All right, but just for a minute. Your father and I have a lot to do tonight, and he's had a difficult day.
He's always got work to do.
Your father has to work hard to buy us the nice things we have, like your presents here.
You gave me these skates. He didn't. I want to take my skates upstairs with me. Can I, Mom?
May I, Martin? Yes, you may. And here, let me hang this whistle around your neck. Now go inside and say goodnight to him, dear.
When I got into bed, I waited a while. But my mother didn't come. The whistle was still around my neck, and so I didn't dare blow it full blast. Because if my father was working, he'd be angry. Well, either my mother didn't hear it downstairs, or she didn't pay any attention to it. So I got out of bed and started down the stairs. Halfway down, looking through the banister rail, I could see my mother sitting there with my father in front of the fire. He had his arm around her, and her head was resting on his shoulder.
Tired, dear.
Ah, yes. I'm glad the boy's in bed. We can have a little time by ourselves.
Well, it was his birthday, so I had to let him stay up a little. He was so excited about his presents.
Yeah, he liked those skates, all right. But I don't think he thought much of that whistle you bought for me to give him.
Well, he wouldn't blow it indoors, dear. But I'm sure when he plays outdoors tomorrow...
Ah, you're very sweet, dear. I'm glad you thought to get him something extra from me. He'd be sure the skates were your idea if you said they came from both of us. He adores you.
He has a mighty nice father, too, darling. Do you know that I love you?
Oh. Martin, what do you mean, scaring your mother like that? Don't you know any
but
better...
But my mother came up with me and tucked me into bed and kissed me goodnight. It wasn't long before my father began to regret that he ever gave me that whistle. There was a growing fascination about it for me, and I was seldom without it, whether out of doors or in the house.
Martin! Stop that noise! Martin! Do you hear me?
All right, I heard you. Gosh, a guy can't have any fun.
What did you say?
Nothing. Why can't I blow my whistle?
Because it makes too much noise. It's getting so we have to listen to that thing from morning to night, and I just won't stand for it. Now, you'll either promise never to blow it in the house again, or I'll take it away from you. Now, which is it going to be?
Well, I don't have to blow it so loud. See, I can make it very soft.
Martin, I said not to blow it in the house. Now, you either take it outdoors this minute or
All right, I'm going. Gosh, what a house. Guy can't do anything. Can't have any fun.
Today, I have an adult's appreciation of how horrible it must have sounded. But at the time, I felt persecuted. And that made the little tin whistle seem more important to me than ever. I endowed it with a personality, as if it could appreciate my righteous indignation. And I took advantage of every opportunity to express my defiance through its shrill voice. Because of my possessive fascination with the whistle, I remember I got into several fights. And as a result of one of them, I lost one of my closest boyhood friends.
Hi, Martin. What you doing?
Hi, George. I was just polishing my whistle. Hey, look.
Oh, gee, that's keen. Let me blow it once, huh?
No, I haven't finished polishing it yet.
Oh, you never let me blow it. I'm not going to eat it.
Yeah, I know, but I just want to finish polishing it first.
Then you'll have some other excuse. What's so wonderful about a tin whistle? You think it was made of gold or something?
Oh, you're just jealous because you haven't got one.
Oh, yeah, I could have one if I wanted it. My father even bought me one once.
Yeah, well, then what happened to it?
Well, I lost it. I didn't care. Shucks, who cares about a stupid whistle?
Well, I care about mine, and I'm not going to lose it. That's why I don't let everybody blow it.
Okay, forget it. What do we do? You want to play catch?
Let's play cops and robbers.
Sure, just so you can blow your whistle. I'm tired of playing cops and robbers. You always have to be the cop.
Well, certainly. Cops got to have whistles, don't they? Else how would they be able to warn the people?
Well, how about letting me be the cop for a change? I can be as good as one as you.
Nah.
Then I won't want to play. You're selfish, Martin. All the kids say so.
I am not selfish. Don't say that.
You are so. You're just selfish and mean.
I said don't say that.
Oh, yeah? What are you going to do about it, selfish? There, I said it again. Selfish.
You dirty. I'll show you.
Ow! Okay, if that's the way you want it, there.
George. I've forgotten his last name now. He was one of my best friends. But we were never friends again after that day. I played alone most of the time, being my own cop after an imaginary robber.
Stop! Or I'll shoot! Bang!
My teacher in the fourth grade was Miss Rice. We often referred to her as Old Lady Rice. But I realize now she couldn't have been more than 30 or 31. I remember I used to hide in the bushes on the corner near the schoolyard during recess and give a blast of my whistle. It sounded just like a police whistle to passing motorists.
Martin Palmer, I see you come out of those bushes. Do you hear me, Martin?
Yes, Miss Rice.
Were you blowing that whistle at the automobiles, Martin?
I was just having some fun.
That's not a very thoughtful way of having fun. Mr. Barclay's had complaints about this from the motorists, but he didn't know who was responsible.
Well, shucks, I can't see anything wrong in just playing a little game.
That's not the point. The fact is, it's very annoying, Martin. And Mr. Barclay has given us instructions to stop whoever is doing it.
Well, I'm not the only one. Lots of kids do it.
You're the only one I can see right now. I want you to give me your whistle.
No.
Martin, give me that whistle. I'm not going to keep it. You can have it back as soon as you feel you can promise to stop frightening people with it.
I promise now. I won't do it again.
No, it's too soon for you to really mean that. You need a little time for the lesson to sink in. Give me the whistle, Martin.
I won't. You can't have it. My father gave it to me.
He didn't give it to you to annoy people. Are you going to let me have it?
No. It's mine. I won't give it to him.
Martin, I'll have to send you to Mr. Barclay's office.
Oh, all right. Here.
That's better. You can have it back when you can come to me with your promise, Martin.
You'll be sorry for this. I'll tell my father on you. He'll be good and mad.
I'm not worried. Remember, I'll be waiting for your promise.
I'll never promise. You'll see. My father can lick Mr. Barclay any day.
At the request of Thomas Jefferson, the Lewis and Clark expedition was authorized by Congress in 1803. Their objects were to obtain further information about the country west of the Mississippi River, to discover what the regions had to offer of value, and to search out the Indian tribes there. Meriwether Lewis and William Clark set out with their band of 30 followers in May of 1804.
No, Sophia.
They ascended the Missouri River to the Mandan villages, near the site of what is now Bismarck, North Dakota. Martin Palmer, can you tell me what they named the three rivers?
Huh? What did you say, Miss Rice?
I knew you weren't paying attention. Lucy, bring me that note.
But, Miss Rice, I only...
You heard me. Bring it here immediately.
Quick, tear it up. Don't let her see it.
Oh, I knew she'd see it. Why did you listen?
Lucy!
Yes, Miss Rice?
I'm very curious to see what is of more interest to you two at this point than the Lewis and Clark expedition. Hand me that note, Lucy.
I didn't want to take it. Martin made me.
Please be quiet. Now then, let me see what was so important. I'll bet Miss Rice and Mr. Buck. Lucy, is this the note that Martin gave to you?
Yes, Miss Rice. I didn't want to take it,
Never
but
Never mind, Lucy. You may take your seat.
Yes, Miss Rice.
Martin, come up here.
But, Miss Rice, I
said to come up here, this minute.
Yes, ma'am.
Martin, did you write this note? Answer me, did you write this note?
Yes, ma'am. But I...
Why? Did you think it would be funny?
No, ma'am. I mean, well, I was only making a joke.
Is this your idea of a joke? Ridiculing people? Making fun of them behind their backs?
But I didn't mean to make fun.
Do you think Mr. Barclay would think this was funny?
No, ma'am.
Well, I think it was a low, mean, disgraceful thing to do. A man like Mr. Barclay, who is so fine, so... Oh, Martin, how could you?
I've forgotten now what the note said. Maybe I want to forget. But it must have been something pretty cruel and nasty. I remember I was stunned by Miss Rice's sudden reaction, and a little frightened. I'd expected her to slap me, to take me by the ear and march me down to Mr. Barclay's office right then. But she did neither of these things. She just left me standing there as she ran sobbing from the room. I looked around at my classmates, and the expression on my face must have been ludicrous because suddenly they began to laugh. It surprised me at first because I was still shocked by Miss Rice's peculiar behavior. But as the laughter continued, it swept me up and I began to laugh with them. Then suddenly I realized they weren't laughing at me, but with me. Why, of course, I was a hero. I had put one over on Miss Rice. I was called down to the principal's office at the end of the day. And hero or no hero in the classroom, I was just a small culprit in these austere surroundings. Mr. Barclay wore a high, stiff collar that seemed to push his chin up and made him look even more imposing. I guess he was quite a handsome man, but he looked like an ogre to me then.
Martin, what is the meaning of this?
What?
Why were you blowing this whistle at passing automobiles? Don't you know you could cause a serious accident?
Did she tell you that?
I've had several complaints from motorists lately about this. Miss Rice told me she caught you at it this morning. What have you to say for yourself?
Nothing.
Very well. Miss Rice, will you please step in here a moment?
Yes, Miss Buckley.
Miss Rice, I think you'd better keep Martin after school today for an hour while he meditates about what he's done. And here's his whistle. He is not to have it back until he promises he'll not use it to frighten people.
I understand. Come, Martin.
You'll be sorry. Both of you.
That's not the proper attitude, Martin. You'll stay after school every day until you learn to realize that. So as not to penalize you too much, Miss Rice, I'll drive you home this evening if you'll stop by when you're ready to leave.
Thank you, Mr. Barclay.
Once started, the rumor that our teacher, Miss Rice, was in love with Melvin Barclay, the principal, grew rapidly. I told the other kids that Miss Rice kept me after school every day just so she could wait for Mr. Barclay to drive her home. That was a bad thing for children to know. After the incident of the note, Miss Rice seldom accorded me any direct attention. She never called upon me to recite or to answer questions, and my lessons were received and graded without comment. It was as if I were in possession of some dark secret concerning her private life, and she didn't want to remind herself of that fact. The girls in the class continued their fascinated speculation.
Know what? None of the other teachers like her.
Why do you suppose?
It's because they're old maids, and they think maybe Mr. Barclay will marry her.
Probably in their own way, the girls guessed right. Most of the teachers were strict, proper, and straight-laced. And Miss Rice was definitely much younger and much prettier than any of them. It was a small school in a small town. Once I overheard two teachers talking about it in the hall after school, not realizing that I was there.
I really feel it is not proper, not proper at all, not in front of susceptible young minds.
What I don't understand is Mr. Barclay. He's so careful in most respects. He obviously dreams of being county superintendent someday.
This, of course, provided a juicy item for conversation, especially among the girls. They even made up songs about it.
Old Lady Rice, she can't fool me. She's in love with Mr. B.
The girls drew hearts on the sidewalk and on the sides of buildings, with Miss Rice's and Mr. Barclay's initials on either end of the arrows running through them. The boys held up their end, too, but they were a little more crude about it.
Old Man Barclay and Old Lady Rice. Day after school for sugar and spice.
Hey, fellas, watch. This is Old Man Barclay, see? And this is Old Lady Rice. And this is what happens when he keeps her after school.
Finally, my continued lateness in getting home was noticed, and my father spoke to me about it.
But why does Miss Rice keep you after school?
Well, she just doesn't like me. And she took that whistle you gave me away from me.
Well, now, son, maybe she had a good reason for taking the whistle. Are you sure you weren't doing anything wrong?
Well, honest, I wasn't. I was just standing by the water fountain getting a drink. She came up behind me and grabbed the whistle. She said they make her nervous.
Martin, you're positive you weren't blowing it? Not even a little bit?
No, I wasn't. Gee, I don't blow it all the time, Mom.
Well, there's some doubt on that point. You certainly didn't give us much rest around the house while you had it.
Just the same, Tom, I think it was downright unfair of Miss Rice to take advantage of him. just because she doesn't happen to like whistles.
She's just a fussy old maid.
Now, that isn't necessary, Martin. Her being unmarried has nothing to do with it. But really, Tom, you should talk it over with her. Get her side of the story.
Oh, Dad don't have to talk to her. Couldn't he just give me an order or something? It would be just as good as his seeing her.
Well, maybe I ought to see her. I'd like to see just what sort of a person she is. She's the newest teacher, isn't she?
She and Mr. Barkley are stuck on each other. They stay after school all the time and smooch.
Martin, you mustn't say such things.
Well, it's true.
How do you know?
Well, everybody says so.
Have you ever seen them?
Well, I... Sure. I've seen them lots of times. Gee, the things they do.
Martin, is this true? You've actually seen them?
Well, didn't I tell you? You think I'm a liar?
Of course not, dear. Tom, this is disgraceful. Right in the school where the children can see them. Young, susceptible minds. Somebody should speak to the school board.
Oh, it's probably not as serious as it sounds. You know how kids exaggerate.
Things happened quickly after that. My mother and father became very interested in the affairs of Miss Rice and Mr. Barkley, and they communicated their interest to other parents. For my part, I had just one idea, to get back my tin whistle, and to get it back without making any promises or apologies.
Who does she think she is, Miss High and Mighty? Think she's got influence because she's principal's pet. I'll show her. I'll make her give me back my tin whistle.
I feel a little sick even now, 26 years later, when I think of that hearing. The school board had to take action. The grown-ups had convinced themselves that this was a scandal. Our young, susceptible minds were in danger of being tainted. It was all rather shame-faced and mean-spirited.
Martin, did you ever see Mr. Barkley kissing Miss Rice?
Yes, sir.
When?
Oh, in his office. I saw him. They kissed each other lots of times.
Thank you, Martin. Miss Hennessy?
Yes, sir.
Miss Hennessy, as a teacher in the principal grammar school, are you of the opinion that there's been anything, shall we say, out of the ordinary going on between Miss Margaret Rice and Mr. Melvin Barkley?
Well, I hate gossips and always have, but I've been a teacher in Princeville for over 30 years, 32 to be exact. I've always tried to do the best job I could and be proud of my duty to guide the destinies of the younger...
Yes, Miss Hennessy, but answer my question. Would you say Miss Rice and Mr. Barkley have been setting a poor example for the students in their school?
Well, I've always held Mr. Barkley in the highest respect, and, well, frankly, I don't know anything, not directly. I wish you wouldn't insist.
There really wasn't any evidence, just mine. But nobody stepped forward to defend Miss Rice. Not the students, not the teachers. On the witness stand, Mr. Barkley seemed extremely stiff and formal.
I should like the permission of the board to read a short statement into the record.
You may proceed, Mr. Barkley.
I, Melvin Barkley, declare that at no time has there ever been anything improper between myself and any member of the teaching staff at Princeville Grammar School. In 8 years in the position, no breath of suspicion has ever before been heard against my record. I have at all times been conscious of my solemn obligation to conduct myself in such a way as to provide the susceptible minds of youth with an example of firm, dignified, and impartial behavior.
What attentions have you paid Miss Margaret Rice?
My attitude toward Miss Rice has always been correct, and our relationship has always been limited to school affairs.
Mr. Barkley, I feel obligated to put a question very bluntly. Are you in love with Miss Rice?
Why? No, sir.
To your knowledge, is Miss Rice in love with you?
Well, really, sir, I'm sure I don't know. This is most embarrassing. As a gentleman...
I shall never forget the last time I saw Miss Rice. It was the morning following the announcement of her dismissal. She came to the school to collect her belongings before a new teacher was assigned to our class. The children all watched silently when she came into the classroom and walked to her desk and went through the drawers. Nobody moved. And you could hear the sound of short, quick breathing all around the room. Some of the girls were sniffling. Miss Rice found what she was looking for.
Martin Palmer?
Yes, Miss Rice?
Come here, please. No, don't be frightened. It's all right. I believe this is your whistle, Martin.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you think you can behave yourself now?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
You're welcome. Goodbye, children.
I remember I stood there, clutching the little tin whistle in my hand possessively, watching Miss Rice leave the room. I looked around at the class, and their faces were as stiff and white as chalk. I felt they were waiting for me to do something. Some act that would break the tension and snap us all back to the free and relaxed normalcy of the classroom. The only thing I could think of was the whistle. I put it to my lips and blew it right at the departing Miss Rice, defiantly and with all my might. When I went home that afternoon, I showed the whistle to my mother, and she smiled with satisfaction, warning me not to make a nuisance of myself with it. But the whistle no longer fascinated me. I no longer cared about hiding in the bushes and scaring motorists, nor about using it to play cops and robbers. I gave it a final toot, threw it into my closet junk box, and went on to other interests. I never saw Miss Rice again. I heard my parents say she went to live with her family somewhere in the Middle West. Mr. Barclay was later reported teaching in an obscure southern village. There was an ugly, smoldering cloud of shame over our town for several weeks after that school board hearing. While rummaging through some old papers this morning, I came across this newspaper clipping of 26 years before. Miss Margaret Rice, 33, until recently a teacher in the Princeville Grammar School, died last night in her father's home following a short illness. Cause of death was described as due to an infection, which at first was diagnosed by doctors as of a trivial nature. These words whipped across my memory and caused me to wince for the boy I had been. As if to mock me, I absentmindedly picked up the little tin whistle which was in the box of old things. It was now battered and rusty. Almost involuntarily, I put it to my lips and blew. The whistle left a sharp, rancid taste in my mouth.
I've just heard John Beale in the leading role of the Columbia Workshop's presentation of The Tin Whistle by Richard S. Burdick, as directed by Carl Beyer, with an original musical score by Everett Helm. Also appearing in today's cast were Edwin Bruce as the boy Martin, Fran Lafferty as the teacher, Al Hodge as the principal, Abby Lewis and Ed Fuller as the boys' parents, and Paula Bauer-Smith, Dick Nelson, Ben Cooper, Joan Patsy Flicker, Abby Boneem, and Peter Griffiths. Next week, the Columbia Workshop program will originate in Hollywood, where William N. Robeson will direct Madeline Pugh's original fantasy, It Shouldn't Happen to a Man. Saturday night is good listening with CBS, so stay tuned in now for correspondent Larry Lesser, who will come to you over many of these same stations in just a few minutes. Don Baker speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.